on today's episode of the podcast, I'd like to give a warm welcome to Megan, who is mum of Pebbles the blind cat. Now, first of all, welcome to the show, Megan.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me.
It's a pleasure. And now, before we talk about Pebbles and all the story of her and her life and who she is, could you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Yes, ma'am. So I am a veterinarian. I have been practicing for about 18 years now. So my professional focus is small animals, but cats have always been kind of my heart and soul and my passion. I am a member of the American Association of Feline Practitioners. So, you know, I get a lot of clients that come to me specifically with their kitty cats and so forth. We live, if you can't tell by my accent, we're in a small rural area in the southern United States. So we do, that does present a challenge economically with a lot of clients. And there's also a lot of stray dogs and cats and so forth. So there's a huge need for animal rescue organizations and so forth. So we get a lot of strays or, you know, different things like that that come into our clinic.
Oh, so do you work for, is it your clinic or do you work part of a practice there?
Right. So I don't own the clinic. I work, there are four veterinarians total that practice at the clinic. The clinic has been there since 1980. So it's a very well established.
Yeah.
And so, and I've been at this particular clinic since 2006. So I'm kind of the old hand there. Our clinic sees, we see large animals. So it's like a mixed animal practice. But like I said, I'm the only one that I specifically focus on dogs and cats.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now you mentioned that there's sometimes economic problems with people in that area because it is so rural. Is that because the majority of the work around there, is it farming work or is it small towns? Can you just tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so it is, there are quite a bit of farms and especially cattle farms in particular. And it's just mostly small town. There's, you know, factory work and that type of thing. So it presents a challenge.
I think I've lost you. Suppose
animals need while still being able to you know, fit within the client's budgets and so forth. But you know, honestly, I feel kind of a pull to work in an area like this. I feel like there is a definite need for veterinarians, for veterinary staff, for animal rescues and so forth. You know, I guess I feel like that we really, there's a lot of good that can be done in an area like this.
And are there a lot of rescues in that area where you live, or is it sort of more independent and led by just individual people who see or recognize that there is a problem with, say, maybe feral cats or stray dogs?
There are rescues for dogs. So the Humane Society mostly focuses on dogs. And there are several rescues for dogs, and even they stay overwhelmed. But honestly, up until here just a few years ago, there were no cat rescues at all. It was just individuals would help cats, and there were, you know, trapping feral cats, we would spay neuter, they would release them, that type of thing. Just recently we've had a couple of people start their own individual animal, specifically cat rescues, which has been a tremendous blessing. Up until that point, even us at the clinic were taking in cats. We would spay neuter and kind of put kittens up front and hope that we could get people to adopt them. But that was, you know, that wasn't a great system. We didn't always, you know, we just kind of had to get them out. Obviously, a clinic isn't set up financially to take care of a lot of unwanted kittens. But, you know, again, we didn't really have a whole lot of options and a whole lot of choice.
Oh, so it's sometimes it can be a really difficult situation, and it's hard, I guess, when you say there's not so many resources available for people to go to
Right.
if they find a litter of kittens. And you know, I guess this leads me on to Pebbles and her very early start in life. So would you like to tell everybody a little bit about how Pebbles came, I guess, into the world and how she came into your path?
Right. Because of the situation with strays and neuters and stray cats and so forth, and people not spaying and neutering their cats, there was a huge, and this was about 6 years ago, before we got any cat rescuers specifically, huge cat and kitten overpopulation problem. And unfortunately, the solution for a lot of people was to dump their cats literally at the city dump. They would just take pregnant cats, kittens, or whatever, and just abandon them there and, left to fend for themselves. And a lot of times, of course, these kittens were completely feral and difficult to catch. And so they would either end up, just trying to survive off of what they could find in the dump. Occasionally, somebody could trap them, or, they just couldn't survive out there. So Pebbles, unfortunately, was left at the dump. She was very, very sick. She had a severe respiratory infection that caused her eyes to have some severe ulceration, so she was completely blind. So one day someone had gone to the city dump and found, they were leaving their garbage, and they saw little Pebbles running around. I think she was with a litter of kittens. All the other kittens were able to escape. Pebbles was not able to escape because she was blind and, couldn't exactly figure out where she was going. So they caught her. They brought her into the clinic, and of course, they thought she was so small and so sick, they felt like that the only option for her would be to euthanize her. And of course, there again, they didn't have any resources to pay for any kind of medical treatment. So they left her there. Now, this did happen to be on a day when I was off work. I wasn't there. But fortunately, one of the assistants saw her and really kind of wanted to try to help her instead of just going ahead and euthanizing her. So she contacted all of the rescue groups and was contacting, even though again at the time it was just, set up for dog rescues, but she was contacting everybody she could, and everybody was saying, no, we can't take her, we can't take this on. And she was waiting at the end of the day. She was waiting to hear from one of the rescue groups. So they said, well, let's go ahead and wait to euthanize her until tomorrow, till we hear back from this other last rescue group. So I fortunately was working the next day. I come into work and they kind of told me about Pebble's story. So I go over there to kind of look and see what we're dealing with, what we're talking about. And I look in the cage and I see this itty bitty, she was probably 6 weeks old, she was barely a pound, this little itty bitty tabby fluff muff, and of course her eyes were in bad shape. I reached in to take her out, and of course she hisses and fluffs up and starts just pitching a fit, and I immediately fell head over heels in love with her. And I said, there is no way in the world that this kitten is going to be euthanized. I wasn't planning to keep her, as I had several other cats already myself. But I was thinking, well, I'm just going to pay for her treatment myself. I'm going to take her. I'm going to rehabilitate her. I'd had a senior blind cat before, so my 22-year-old cat at the time had gone blind from hypertension, but this was a whole other situation. I'd seen a couple of clients that had blind cats, but I really didn't have a whole lot of experience with blind kittens and that kind of thing. But I thought, well, she obviously is a fighter. She wants to survive, so I'm going to give her every possible chance that she can have. So she was, of course, too small and a little bit sickly at the time to have her surgery to have her eyes removed. So I took her home, and of course I kept her in the bathroom for a few days. She was still pretty nervous, but there again, she was young enough that she was You know, we were able to, I was able to socialize her, you know, she wasn't past her socialization age, a little bit of food and, you know, realizing that we weren't going to hurt her. She started to really come out of her shell. Again, she was still kind of kept in the bathroom, and this time I, you know, up for her protection and in isolation from the other cats. So she quickly started growing, got big enough. And, you know, there again, I didn't have, you know, you think of like you see on the internet, these sweet pictures of this, you know, these blind donkeys that are led around by dogs that, you know, that need. And I thought, well, she's just going to be this pitiful little thing. I'm going to have to just help her do every little thing. And that was absolutely not true. So we let her out, and immediately, so we have a long hallway where our bathroom is. So immediately she goes flying down the hall, full speed ahead, runs headfirst into the wall. And of course I start going into panic attack, like, oh no, this was a terrible idea. But as soon as she did that, she just, like, she knew where that wall was. She just took off running, ran straight into the kitchen, and has just been, you know, a wild little wild maniac ever since. She learned, so, you know, if she, you know, bumped into something, she, her memory, she never bumped into it again. She's like, okay, well, this is here, this is here. You know, she just learned to navigate through the whole house and, you know, has everything completely memorized. We have more cat furniture in our house than human furniture, but she knows where every single little piece is. She knows how to climb up, and she's just incredible. It's just completely opened my eyes to, you know, blind cats and the, you know, how amazing they are.
So at what point did you realize that you were actually going to keep her? Because she was not supposed to be your cat.
So, I mean, honestly, I should not even ever use the word foster. I think I've only fostered two or three that actually ever left my house. It was very, very quickly in the process. Honestly, probably like 2 weeks into it, my husband and I started to, you know, we're still quote unquote fostering her. And then we start talking about names and what we're going to name her. And once they have a name, they're here forever. So, but yeah. And, you know, there again, there were so many quote unquote healthy kittens that needed homes. I just knew that she would be almost impossible to place, you know, being given her disability. So, but yeah, she's just the joy that she's given me every day since we've had her is just, it's just unlike anything else.
And where did her name come from?
You know, I don't know. We came up with a list, and my husband had a list, and I had a list of several different names, and just none of them were right. And then I just looked at her one day and I said, you know, why don't we name her Pebbles? And he said, I just really like that. That fits her. And so we just started calling her Pebbles. And she responded to it, and she knows her name very, very well. And it just kind of fit. And there we have it.
Oh, and what's her general day-to-day life like now? Because obviously you've said she's happy to run around and she has siblings that she has in the home. How does she get along with them?
So she's very independent. She likes some of them more than others. Mm-hmm. She likes to play with them. So especially a couple of her brothers, she likes to play with, but that's on her terms. She does not want them to play with her. So if she approaches and she kind of swats them around, that's fine. But she gets very annoyed. And now she's tiny. She's actually very petite. She's barely in pounds. She's like 6.8 pounds. And her brothers are maybe like, you know, 14 pounds. So she's one of the smaller ones. But she does not care. She is the boss of the house. She has things her way. And that's kind of all there is to it. And you know, actually when she was a very young, of course, all my cats stay inside all the time. But when she was very young, she expressed an interest and seemed very interested in what was going on outside. So I started her off probably at, I would say 3 months old. We started practicing and harness training and so forth. I started when she was in the house, I would put the harness on her, let her just kind of get used to the feel of it. And then eventually we started, you know, taking walks outside. And so she's pretty much my only kitty cat that gets to go outside with me, but she loves to go on leash walks and harness walks outside. She loves to sit out on the front porch with me. Of course, I don't ever leave her out when she's not right next to me, but she, but that's kind of one of her favorite things is if I go into the drawer where we keep her little harness, she gets so excited and runs to the front door. So, yeah, I mean, generally, you know, day to day, she's just like a normal kitty cat, you know, she knows her meal times and is very, very insistent that we're not late for those. We can't even be a minute or two late or it's trouble in the house. She has her favorite, you know, spots on the cat trees that she climbs up. It's not unusual to, you know, walk in the kitchen and she's sitting up on top of the refrigerator. When she was little, things like that used to kind of cause panic. And really to me, that was the hardest part of starting and learning how to adjust to a blind cat. It wasn't her learning things. It was me letting her, basically letting her investigate the environment, letting her climb up onto a cat tree and then figure out herself how to get back down. It was really hard to fight the instinct to, you know, go over there and help her and pick her up and put her back down in the floor. And I mean, obviously if she was really confused, I would help her, but you know, just letting her learn things on her own was probably one of the most difficult parts about the whole thing.
I guess it goes against all of your natural instincts because you're the one that's more aware of everything around her that she could potentially hurt herself, whereas she doesn't know any different.
Absolutely. Yes.
And what does it feel like for you to be able to give her the gift of going outside and feeling the sunshine on her and smelling the fresh air and enjoying these walks and moments with you?
You know, it is such a wonderful bonding experience for us, and it's something special that she and I share. And even my husband usually doesn't take her out, so it's kind of a me and Pebbles moment.
Yeah.
And you know, again, just I almost feel like because she's blind, her senses are so heightened. She just to watch her, and she looks, I mean, we always say, oh, she's looking at this. I mean, she literally will look at things even though she has no eyes. You know, she'll turn her head and just kind of raise her head up if there's a bird flying over, and she just takes in all the sights and sounds and or the smells and sounds, and to kind of see things through her perspective is just, it's incredible. It's, you know, having a blind cat is, it's not what I expected, but it's absolutely one of the most incredible and rewarding experiences of my life. And of course, now I have three blind cats, but she, you know, she definitely just opened up my eyes to a whole new, you know, a whole new perspective on things.
And do you ever meet people when you're out walking with her?
I do. Of course, we live out in the country, so there's not a lot of people around here, but definitely people will drive by, and it's just, you know, surprising for them to, you know, to see the cat. And anytime anybody comes over to visit, it's obvious she can't see because she has no eyes, but people still don't believe it when they see her functioning, when they see her, you know, just her interactions. It's not, you know, and thinking of her as a blind cat, it's not even something that we think about, you know, only when it, you know, when it comes up in conversation. But I mean, to us, she's just Pebbles. She's just a normal, average, regular kitty cat, you know. There's almost, you know, it's not even at the forefront of our minds. It's not something you think about every day. She's just Pebbles, and she just does her thing.
And you said you have other blind cats as well in your home. Did they have the same experience as her, or were they born blind? What's their stories?
So they are both young, Zeke and Griffin. We got them a year ago. In September was a year ago that we adopted them. They came from a rescue group that was not far from here. So, of course, I'm a member of, on Facebook, I'm a member of a blind cat group. And this is a worldwide blind cat group. And I was just scrolling one day and I saw a picture of these two most adorable little kittens that were blind. So one of them had had his eyes removed, and the littlest ones, he had not yet had his surgery, which he eventually had his surgery. And they said, you know, they were these two, they were not siblings, but they were a bonded pair, and they were really having trouble finding any interest in these kittens, individually, or, you know, much less as, you know, anybody wanting to adopt both of them. And I thought, well, you know, I've already got several cats. I don't need any cats. But I kept reading the post and I saw that they were just within, you know, in my state, within a very reasonable driving distance of where I was. And I just couldn't believe it. So I could not stop thinking about them. I started following the cat rescue group where they were located. And I just felt such a strong pull to these two kittens. So I, you know, eventually I just said, I, you know, these boys are meant to be with me. And so we, you know, we submitted our application and went ahead and adopted them. They actually, so this rescue organization, it is a wonderful organization. They focus specifically on kittens, not just kittens, which they'll take in healthy kittens, but they will take in the saddest, sickest, most, you know, pitiful kittens that everybody else has given up on. And they do absolutely everything they can to save and rehabilitate these kittens. They do incredible work. And so they had found Griffin. Griffin's a little ginger tabby. They had found him like a month before they got Zeke, and Griffin had a similar story to Pebbles where, you know, he had the severe eye infection, respiratory infection. They had to do surgery and remove his eyes. And then it was not even a month later that someone had found little Zeke's a little fluffy gray kitty. They had found him on the side of the road. He was less than a pound. He was tiny. He was so sick, they thought he was dead. So they, you know, brought him to a vet clinic and, you know, and the vet examined him and said, well, he's in very, very bad shape. And they said, well, we can't take him. And this clinic knew which rescue organization to contact. So they did everything they could for him. And it was, you know, they barely saved him. But they definitely pulled him back from the brink of death and then got him strong enough. He had his eyes removed. He and Griffin were extremely bonded. The vet clinic that actually performed the surgery said, even when they had to separate them after their surgeries, that they were, you know, they were just having, you know, an absolute come apart and very upset that they, you know, had to be separated even for the short time after their surgery. So the rescue group really, really wanted them to be adopted together. So, like I said, we submitted our application and we were approved. We drove to go pick them up. So this started a whole other thing. After we got them, we brought them home, and when I was looking at Zeke, kind of my doctor instincts perked up a little bit, and I said, there's something not exactly right with this little kitten. I just didn't feel quite right about him. And I had to go to work the next day. So the next day I went to work, came back home from work, and he was just not right. I looked at him and his belly was super, super bloated. You know, he almost looked pregnant. And I said, oh no, my heart just sank. So I got a syringe and needle and did a little aspirate of his abdomen. And that was one of kind of the lowest moments, I think. I pulled out a lot of really thick yellow fluid, which was pretty much diagnostic for FIP, feline infectious peritonitis. And I was devastated. I just kind of honestly sat on the floor and cried for a few minutes before I could get myself together. I'd had these kittens, you know, just over 24 hours, and I was just devastated. Fortunately, I had heard a little bit about the FIP treatment. So all through vet school and my entire professional career, FIP, you know, we're taught FIP is fatal. They get FIP, you can sometimes manage the symptoms, keep them feeling okay for a month or two, but it's fatal no matter what you do. End of story. Euthanize now or euthanize when they get sicker, and that's your options. But recently, over the past 5 years, in the United States, there were studies done at UC Davis, where there was an actual cure found for FIP. And this wasn't just, you know, treat them, hope that they do better. This was at minimum, you know, 85 to 90% of cats that were treated with this miraculous FIP medication were cured, 100%. So unfortunately in the United States, because of kind of some of the politics of the drug approval process and so forth, this drug is completely illegal. The only way to obtain this medication is through illegal routes, you know, black market medications through China. I had heard enough about it that I was actually a member of an FIP veterinary group on Facebook. So as soon as I pulled that fluid off of Zeke's belly, I immediately got on there and, you know, said, help, I am desperate. I will do anything I have to do to save this kitten. I cannot let him die. I've only known him for 24 hours, but we already love him. And also for his brother, Griffin, they're so bonded. You know, we can't let poor Griffin lose his brother. So that they directed me immediately where to go. There is a specific Facebook group, FIP Warriors 5.0, where you can get this medication. Again, this is completely, you know, completely black market. And as a veterinarian, that's even a little bit more sketchy for me, you know, as my license honestly is at risk in pursuing this type of treatment, but you know, it is what it is. So we went through I went through those channels without hesitation, and we obtained these medications. They're quite expensive, and it's a very, very intense treatment. So there are pills and there are injections. Because of Zeke's condition, he had to get injections, and he ended up having to get very, very high doses of the injections to finally start pulling the fluid off of his belly. But he typically the basic course is 84 days of very painful injections. Zeke actually ended up having to go through 98 days of injection. And it was a very, very, and of course it was traumatizing for both of us, because he, you know, he didn't know me. And it's like literally, you know, 48 hours after he met me and moved to our house, I start injecting these painful shots into his body. But, you know, little Zeke is such a gentle and good natured kitten, that we bonded somehow. We really, really bonded over this awful time that we had to go through. And he's actually right now he's laying on my right shoulder here. So he's kind of a mama's boy. And of course, you know, with him being blind, that adds a whole other traumatizing dynamic to the situation. But he finished his last injections in December of last year. So after they complete the injections, they go through 84 days of observation. Observation is, in a lot of ways, it's even more difficult than treatment, because during this time you start to see some improvement while they're on treatment. So you kind of hold on to the treatment like, okay, this is helping him. And then after, at the end of the treatment, you just suddenly stop. You stop giving injections, and it's really hard to let go and just watch and see, is he going to get sick again? So that was a very, very difficult time. But he did beautifully after we increased his dose. You know, it took 4 weeks. So after 4 weeks of just agonizing, you know, lots of tears, lots of stress, is he going to get better? Is he not going to get better? It was just like overnight. His belly, and of course, I was weighing him every single day. I was taking a tape measure, measuring in his belly every day to see if the fluid was going down, measuring how much food he was eating. It was literally within like 24 hours, his belly just shrunk down to normal size. He started just playing like a normal kitten. And ever since then, after that 4 week, that miraculous change, he's been perfect. So he was able to, in March, be officially cured of FIP. And he's wonderful today. He's he's just like a normal, happy, healthy little guy.
And what was the reason for the extension of his normal 8 to 4 day treatment?
So, well, what and that's a really good question. So FIP comes in different forms. There's wet form, there's dry form, and part of the dry form can be neurologic. So Zeke presented as a wet form, and wet is when belly fills up with lots of fluid, and that's typically the easiest one to diagnose. I mean, you pull the fluid off of a kitten that's running a fever, not feeling good, and you pretty much know what it is. Of course, we sent it off and did, all kinds of blood tests to confirm, but that's a pretty easy diagnosis. So we gave Zeke, and he had no neurologic signs or no other signs, so we gave Zeke the diagnosis of wet FIP. Wet FIP is going to have a slightly lower dose of the GS injection treatment. So we started him on that dose. What we think happened is that FIP can also manifest as an ocular form. So dry FIP, any cat that's showing signs of FIP, you look in their eyes, and if they have uveitis or inflammation of the eyes, then okay, well, they've got dry FIP on top of wet FIP, they're going to need a higher dose. So we think that Zeke probably also had some ocular FIP, but obviously he didn't have eyes, so he had some dry FIP going on that we were not aware of. So we we're giving him a lower dose than he actually needed. So we extended a little bit longer because typically in most cases of wet FIP, within 2 weeks, the fluid should be completely gone or almost completely gone. But as I said, his fluid lingered. So 4 weeks in, and he was doing okay. He was eating okay. He was gaining weight, but he still just looked like a little, pregnant watermelon kind of thing. And still, I tapped his belly. We started to think that he was resistant to it. And that we were going to have to add other medications and all, and that was a really, really stressful time. And just before we were going to start changing his protocol up, he just, we decided we increased his dose to the dry dose, and he just started responding so beautifully. So even though he was doing really well by the end of 84 days, because he kind of had a slow start because it took him a little to respond, we did decide, and I was thrilled. I said, let's just extend this a little bit longer. It's, sure it's expensive, sure it's, he's got to go through more injections, but I would rather let's just do it for 2 more weeks and make sure versus him come back and have a relapse later on.
And if he did have a relapse, do you have to start all over again?
You have to start the 84 days all over again. Yeah, and it happens. So the statistics that from my understanding is 85% of cats are cured completely with no relapses after the first round of treatment. And then for those cats that do relapse, another 85% of those are cured, and that's at least 85% of those are cured with the second round of treatment. So it does happen, and it's heartbreaking, but thank goodness Zeke didn't show any signs of relapse, and he's very healthy now.
And what did you do? Because obviously you mentioned the injections are very painful, and from what I understand, it's because the needles are a lot thicker because of the solution that you have to inject them with. What did you do to make it more comfortable for him or less stressful? Because obviously he knew this was a daily occurrence.
Yes. So, So you're correct. So the solution is very, very thick. So we have to use a larger gauge needle, but it's also very painful because it has to be to stabilize the compound. It has to be formulated in an acid. So it's very acidic. And in fact, many cats, thankfully not Zeke. Zeke got one little sore, but many cats start developing sores all over their body, especially since they're getting these injections, at least 84 injections. So Zeke fortunately was just, he's a real good mellow kitten. I did, so my husband's a truck driver, so he's not home every day. And you have to give these injections at the same time. There were days when I left work early, like I've got to leave. It's time for me to give my kitten his shot, and that's all there is to it. You've got to be very consistent and give them at the same time every day. So Zeke learned what times the injections were. And he would go and hide, and bless his little heart, he would hide like behind the toilet in the bathroom. And so he knew they were coming, but he was actually a really good sport for it. Some days, of course, were better than others. I got little churu treats. I don't know if you know what those are, but they're kind of, cats love them. So it's just kind of a tasty little thing in a tube, and I would let Zeke lick them, and he's very food motivated, so he would lick them while I would kind of prepare him and give him his injection. And of course, obviously I give all kinds of injections to dogs and cats every day in my professional life. So I'm obviously very skilled at giving animals injections, but even for me, so I really feel for those people who are treating their cats who don't have that experience, because there were days when I went through his skin completely and had to re-give the injection. There were days when I got bitten and scratched. There were days when I had to give, two shots because I couldn't get the first one in. So it wasn't all easy going, but most days were he actually tolerated them very well. And I actually had a pattern. So his little body was so tiny, I had to pick. So I kind of did three quadrants down each side. So I would go, one day I would do left front shoulder, left mid side, and then left rear. And then the next day I would go to the right side. So we just really, I've really had a consistent pattern. I had a log book. So every day I wrote down, and I still have my little book. I wrote down his weight. I wrote down his abdominal circumference. I wrote down the location of the injection, how much he weighed, how much was given. Because of course we have to weigh him every day, because as he grows, we titrate the dose up based on his weight. So as he got bigger, he really started to get a higher volume of injection. But it was very, like I said, it was very difficult, and he was very nervous when it came time for the injections. But I it's amazing how well he did. It really is. I'm very surprised. And with his personality, some people that have really hard time with this can eventually swap to the pills, but he would be way better for the injections than pills. I had to give him different medications along the way, and I can pill just about any cat, but Zeke, he is almost impossible to pill. So yeah, he was, I was just really blessed to have such a good little kitten. And he just always trusted me. I don't know what he thought or why he thought I was, causing this pain every day, but he also knew that it would just last for a second. And then, we would be on to, to cuddle and get treats and that kind of thing.
And what was he like the very first day after his last injection, when obviously he's not going to have one that day, but he would be expecting to have one?
Yeah, same thing. So he it really probably took maybe a week of him at the same time would go and run and hide from me, and then it was almost like he would peek out like, are you sure? Is it safe for me to come out? So it did take him a little bit of time to realize that hey, we're not doing this anymore. And really after a week, I mean, and I try to explain that to people, that are hesitant to do this kind of thing. It is obviously very difficult, and it hurts me deeply to have to inject my cat and to give inflict this pain on my cat and that kind of thing. But they forget, like he, you know, today, I'm sure he has no idea that, you know, that we ever went through this awful time together. Like I said, he's super, super bonded with me. And so, you know, it was very expensive. It was very, 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 very heartbreaking. But it's also, I'm also really grateful that I was able to go through that experience. Again, as a veterinarian, I am not legally able to discuss this with my clients. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I have had a couple of situations. I've not yet had clients pursue this, but I have had situations where, where I would say, look, as your veterinarian, I legally have to tell you that there is no treatment, there is no cure for this disease. I'm not going to be your veterinarian for a second, and I'm going to tell you what to do and where to go. And I'm going to tell you that I did this and that my cat is 100% cured and healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a difficult situation. It's expensive. It's, it's very stressful, but you do what you want to do, but these are your options kind of thing. And I don't, as a veterinarian, it's a lot trickier being involved in the treatment, just because there are issues where, yes, I mean, they in theory could pull my license. I don't know that they've actually ever, pursued any veterinarians who have gone through this treatment or who support owners through this treatment. I don't know that they ever have, but, in my mind, I was thinking if they're going to take my license for saving my kitten's life, then that's just what's going to have to happen. Cause obviously my license is important to me, but I became a veterinarian to help animals and to save lives. And that's just what I was, what I'm going to do, regardless. So I was happy to be able to do it.
It's wonderful to hear of such success stories, because I have had a couple of people who have come on the show and they've spoken about this journey, and it's a very difficult one, but they've all said if they had to do it again, they would do it again, because their cats mean so much to them. And as you said, they're a bonded pair and you don't want something to happen to one of them. And it's a difficult situation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But yeah, there's not a question in my mind. If I would do it again in a heartbeat. Yeah. I mean, I would hate to have to go through it again, but in a heartbeat. And I will, any clients that are hesitant to go through it, I would tell them in a heartbeat, like if there's any way that you can do this, it is worth it. It is completely worth it.
And then I was just wanting to go back to Pebbles again, because obviously it's an important time of the year coming up, which is Halloween.
Yes.
And Christmas.
Yes.
And I know that Pebble likes to dress up.
Yes, she does. She
does. And I just wondered, has she a special costume for this Halloween and Christmas?
So, sadly enough, I have a huge box in my closet full of all kinds of costumes for little Pebbles. And a lot of people ask me, because you think most cats, and you see pictures of cats that are grumpy and distressed and upset that are in costumes. So what Pebbles will not tolerate is, she doesn't like hats or anything on her head. And she also doesn't like elastic around her front legs. But otherwise, if it's just like, regular little costumes and vests and shirts and she does not mind at all. And I think it's probably because she's so used to wearing a harness and that kind of thing. But yeah, she's got so many costumes. So I don't have yet I don't know exactly which one she's going to be wearing this year. But I think my favorite one is Cowgirl Pebbles, where she's dressed up like a little cowgirl. She's not fond of that one because she's got a little hat that she has to wear with it. So she does not approve of that. But she's also got her super Pebbles. And of course, another one of my favorites is Dr. Pebbles. So she dresses up like a doctor. So
you
have to do that. But yeah, we're still working out exactly what she'll be. But she does, for Christmas, we always dress her up. She's got several different little Christmas sweaters and Christmas vests, which are very cute, but they're also functional, of course, mm-hmm. When we walk outside and all of that, and it's chilly outside, you know, it kind of helps keep her warm. And you know, we're in the South here, in the Southern USA, we don't get a lot of snow, but we usually get maybe 1 to 2 decent snows a year, if we're lucky. And I found that that is one thing that Pebble says, absolutely not. She says, I will go out cold. If it's misting rain, it's okay. If it's really, really hot, we're fine. But if there's snow out there, if there's a dusting of snow, we're not doing this. So
she's not loving it.
She does not like the snow. She'll sit outside on the porch with me, but we're not going in the grass if there's any snow out there. So
I just think she's sensible.
Yes, she is. Yes, she is a smart girl. Oh. That is true.
And do you finally have any words for all of your wonderful supporters on Pebble's Facebook page?
So you know, with Pebble's Facebook, and she's also on Twitter and all of that, I try to normalize blind cats as much as possible, instead of, you know, every day focusing on, look, Pebbles is blind and look what she can do. I mean, there's a little bit of that, but mostly I hope that she can portray to people that blind cats are cats. I mean, again, I've got 3 blind cats. They're all completely different. They all have their own personalities, just like, you know, just like any other cat. There's very small adjustments or you know, that we make and that we learn along the way with blind cats, but essentially anybody can own a blind cat, mm-hmm. and take care of a blind cat. And you know, it is not, you know, we don't even like to call it a disability. It's just, you know, she's just special. So, you know, I really hope that people, if they're looking to adopt, and I try to promote this on her page, not just blind cats, but, you know, look for, don't overlook, of course, you know, the beautiful, perfect little sweet kittens need homes too, but we don't need to overlook, you know, senior cats or, you know, blind cats or 3-legged cats or FIV positive cats. You know, we, you know, they all can be wonderful, wonderful additions to someone's household. And, you know, I definitely just, if nothing else, I guess my whole purpose in posting Pebbles on social media is twofold. Again, number one, just to help normalize different cats, cats that don't just look like your perfect, you know, so-called perfect little, you know, fluffy, healthy house cats, just to show people that they're normal, they're lovable, and they're perfect the way they are. And also, I just, you know, I just want to, the world is stressful and full of all kinds of drama and sadness. And I just want to, you know, if I can just bring a smile to someone's face, you know, that just warms my heart that, you know, my little tiny Pebbles, and I mean, she's just our sassy little sweet Pebbles. And if in some way she can make someone smile, you know, across the world, that's just incredible to me.
Oh, well, it's lovely that you share her with other people, and especially, as you said, in a positive way, to try and encourage people to see past the blindness, that she is just a normal cat. She's just a little bit different, that's all.
Right.
So, yeah, I just want to say thank you, Megan, for coming on the show and sharing Pebble's story and also Zeke's story as well.
Yeah, I very much appreciate you having me. I didn't necessarily mean to go off talking about Zeke, but...
No, I wanted that as well to be included, because obviously I think FIP is something that you hear more about these days, and the more stories that are shared, people are less afraid of it. So
right,
you could
right.
just save a life.
absolutely. And that that's another thing, FIP kittens, you know, we don't have to be scared to have FIP kittens with our cats. It's okay to mix them to adopt a cat that's recovered from FIP. We don't need to be scared of that, they can go on to live normal, healthy, perfect lives as well. So, hopefully more and more as time passes, there won't be such a stigma attached to FIP.
That would be in a perfect world, but we can only do what we can do as we go through our own journeys. But yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. So yeah, it was a pleasure to talk to you, Megan, and thank you so much for your time.
I very much appreciate you having me.
Have you picked up a copy of your 2023 Let's Chat About Cats calendar yet? If you haven't, there's still time. Just pop over to www.letschataboutcatspodcast.com to see how by purchasing a copy, you can support RARF, the Ryan Animal Rescue Foundation, and Sterling Trap King Davis carry out their incredible work in the community for animals and people. The calendar features 12 incredible cats who all have a story to share. Courage from Seattle Area Feline Rescue, Wi-Fi from Blind Cat Rescue, Captain Patch the Amazing Aqua Cat, Josephine the Quirky Cat, Toby, Leo and Chino from Tummy and Gummy, Smoosh the Littlest Warrior Princess, Sterling alongside his gorgeous Demeter Joe, Lady Marmee, Special Agent Bobcat, Marmalade and Golden Balls Bond, Dusty the Fat Campfire Cat, and last but not least, the incredible Snapple, aka Tux on Wheels. Don't delay, pick up your copy today. Global shipping is available.